One of the biggest frustrations is when you're given money advice that you see it on paper, it should work, and yet no matter what you do, you just can't make it stick. Now, our instinct when this happens is one of two things. One, that we beat ourselves up, we tell ourselves that we suck. Why do we always do this? Or the second, that the advice sucks. It was never real to begin with. That person doesn't know what they're talking about. They're an idiot. Both totally natural reactions and both probably wrong. Here's what probably happened instead. There are four key types of people, and they give you a totally different money personality. They mean that totally different strategies will work for you. And it also changes how you should work with other people when it comes to money, especially someone like your partner. Different personality types work together in different ways. So we're breaking it down today. Welcome to Making Sense. It's the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee. I'm Frances Cook, a financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. Now, these four personality types, I've taken them from Gretchen Rubin's work, her book. It's called The Four Tendencies. You might remember a few episodes back, I was talking to the lovely Enable Me strategic coach, Katie Wesney. She uses this in her work to help her figure out strategies for clients. Loved that episode. I had so much fun, went away and read the book. If you follow me on social media, you'll know I've set the goal of reading more. This one was such a fun read. So there are four different money personalities. Almost all public financial advice is really written for just one of them. The rest of us are left ignored, including me. Yes, don't worry, I'll tell you which personality I am. It is embarrassing. Okay, so we have four different personality types, four different ways of handling our money. What are they? Now, first of all, these personality types are not really so much about your values or your income. It's definitely not about your intelligence. This is a way of categorizing us based on how we respond to expectations. Because money is basically one long list of expectations. So this framework, super relevant. You're told to save this much, to stick to the plan, don't overspend, follow the rules, do what you said you would do. But people are incredibly different in which expectations they respond to and which ones they just ignore or resist or renegotiate, even if they have the best of intentions. And so once you see this, so much money behavior suddenly makes sense. So, money personality number one, the upholder. Upholders are absolute goody two-shoes, said with love, but yes, they are. Now, upholders do well with both their internal expectations, so the expectations they have of themselves, and external expectations, expectations other people have of them. If they say they'll do something, they do it. If there's a rule, they follow it. If there's a plan, they stick to it. So how does this show up with money? Upholders are the people who are more likely to set up automatic savings and never touch it. They follow budgets, probably without feeling trapped by them. They actually enjoy ticking financial boxes. Money systems often work for upholders because for them, it doesn't feel like a fight. They like some clear rules to follow them, to meet goals, to rise to the occasion. You can see what I mean. Total goody two shoes. So the upholders, where does it go wrong for them? I know I'm making fun of them, just gently and with love, but it's actually not all sunshine and roses for the upholders. We love our wee nerds, but the downside is this sense of rigidness. They can find it really hard to let go, even if they want to. In fact, even if they need to. When life changes, say their income shifts or kids arrive or stress ramps up for whatever reason, sometimes upholders keep forcing a system that no longer fits because this is the plan or this is what I said I'd do and I need to stick to it. They can also really struggle when a partner doesn't operate in quite the same way, and it can start to feel like, why can't you just do it? So, for the upholder, what works best? What can make life a little easier for our upholders, and particularly their money life? Now, our upholder friends love it when they have clear rules, a simple, predictable system, automation, and defined targets. Upholders don't need motivation hacks. Nice for them. But they do need systems that stay realistic as life changes. And also to recognize that they will sometimes struggle to recognize when they need to make a change. And frankly, to cut themselves a break now and then. Money personality number two, the questioner. Now, if you heard the episode that I did with Katie, you'll know that when she first described the tendencies, I was like, oh no, I think I'm a rebel. More on that tendency later. As I read the book, I was like, that's not quite right, because I am actually really good at meeting expectations, but only entirely on my own terms, which you may now be thinking, what a dick, you are correct. I think I'm a bit of a nightmare sometimes, but that is a story for another day. Where I've landed on this is that I am definitely a questioner. So my fellow questioners, come with me and let us accept our pros and our cons together. Questioners don't automatically accept expectations. They're really good at rising to the occasion, but only once they've been convinced. They ask, why? Does this make sense? Is this actually the best way? Basically, we tend to look at a situation, look at what we're being told to do, then go away and do miles of research into it. If we're convinced, we're then going to smash it out and stick to it beautifully. If we're not convinced, there's no one on God's green earth that can convince us to do it. We're as stubborn as mules. It's not happening. It's probably not a surprise that I ended up in journalism, and I think journalists are probably heavily overrepresented on this one. I had a middle management job in journalism for a hot second. Let me tell you, it's a nightmare. Journalists are not people who want to be led. Also, I didn't want to be a middle manager, so very clearly not my jam on that. Prefer to have my hands on the tools doing stuff all around a bad situation. Once again, a story for another day. Anyway, questioners, they will meet an expectation, but only if it passes their research and tests. So, how does this change how a questioner handles their cash? Questioners are people who research everything, customize financial advice, ignore generic rules if they think that they don't apply to their situation. I saw some writing on it where they said that questioners were very thoughtful about things, which I think is delightfully diplomatic. So sure, let's take that nice spin on it. Where it can go wrong, though, because here's the thing. All of that research is beautiful. Knowledge is power. Clearly, I'm biased being a questioner myself, but I think it's good to get stuck in and check if something truly is the right way. The problem is that means questioners really bad at getting stuck in analysis paralysis. There is always one more article to read, one more strategy to compare, one more optimization to make. Sometimes no plan feels good enough to commit to, but you've got to move at some point. Slow, imperfect progress is better than no movement at all. A second problem area is that questioners, ironically, hate being questioned because they've done all the research already, and so they're right, and you don't need to ask them any further questions. Just do what you're told. Look, I've already said we can be jerks. It just feels like it needs repeating at certain points. I am aware. This is also just how I am. The thing is, if it's good research, you've got to be prepared to back yourself and then get other people on board with it and not just be arrogant with things. How do we get our prickly little questioners to calm down, play nicely with others, and have lower stress with their money? Some tactics that can help with this. Making sure they understand the why behind any money move you're asking them to make. Creating more flexible frameworks instead of rigid rules. Creating a line in the sand where you get maybe 2 days to do as much research as you want. And then after that, you have to commit to a path and get going. If you're a questioner, being told to just do this is the fastest way to get absolutely nothing. Give our questioner pals a little bit of time to scratch that research itch, but not endless time. Money personality number 3, the obliger. Now, obligers are absolute sweeties who sometimes let themselves down, and they're also the most common type. So if this is you, you're in great company. Obligers respond strongly to external expectations from other people, but struggle with internal ones. So they are brilliant at showing up for other people and terrible at prioritizing themselves and what they might think they should do. Boss asks them to get a technical report done. Excellent, it shall be so. But they decide they want to take up running of their own accord. That 5 a.m. alarm is probably getting ignored. How does this show up for an obliger's money? Well, there are lots of strengths to being an obliger. They're often great at managing shared finances. They're reliable bill payers. They are frankly probably the ones who are holding everything together. But when it comes to their own goals, if no one else has told them to do it, then savings might get delayed. For example, their own needs get postponed. And often spending creeps in quietly as the sense of exhaustion builds. Where it can go wrong, look, the problem here is that obligers often end up burnt out. They've done the right thing for everyone else and often neglected themselves, their own goals, what they want. Apart from this being a bad thing just by itself, it can mean that eventually money becomes the release valve, the treat, the splurge, the I finally deserve this. It's not necessarily because they're irresponsible, but they just hit a point where they get pretty depleted. So, what do we do to address this? Get things back on track for the obliger. If you remember, I had that running goal earlier as an example of something an obliger would probably neglect, but not if they make themselves accountable to someone else. So, in that instance, joining a running club or running with a friend or a trainer, all of a sudden, the obliger will be there, shoes on, ready to go. It's all about just understanding yourself and working with it. So, obligers do better when there is external accountability, some shared goals, systems where their needs are still visible and part of the external goals, rather than feeling like an optional add-on. If you're an obliger, it's not that you need more discipline. It's that you need structures to make sure that you're not always the last in line. Money personality, and number 4, the rebel, the prickliest of all of our customers here. But don't worry, there are ways to manage yourself if this is you. You're just a handful. Rebels resist both external and internal expectations. The moment that something becomes a rule, even a rule they made themselves, it can feel suffocating. You are likely to not do what others tell you to do or what you yourself want to do. My mum always used to say, you don't pull a cow forward by the horns. That's you, champs. If someone has to pull you forward, you're going to dig your hooves in and go absolutely nowhere. So how does this show up with your money? As you can imagine, this can cause some niggles. Rebels often hate budgets. They hate being told what to do. They hate being told what they said they would do. And on the face of it, this might sound immovable and chaotic and doomed for failure. It can be. But here's the key to understanding a rebel. What they truly, deeply care about the most is identity. Feeling like they have autonomy and feeling like they have choice. And when it comes to motivating a rebel, making that appeal to their identity seems to be the key. Now, where it can go wrong for a rebel, let's get into that, because a lot of traditional money advice is aimed at upholders, sometimes the obligers. So for rebels, that same advice feels incredibly controlling. They immediately, as the name would suggest, rebel. Actions are accurate to the description on the tin. It just goes really poorly, even if actually the rebel quite wants to make some changes and they can't understand why they're suddenly sabotaging themselves. Rebels often reject systems entirely, even when they want the outcome, the security, the freedom, the options. So you got to switch gears. What should we do with our rebels instead? You can start with choice-based systems, guardrails instead of hard rules, and identity framing, as in, this is the kind of person I am. Particularly that identity one seems to be really key. So instead of something like, I have to save $20 a week, not going to happen. They might say something like, I'm the kind of person who wants the option to be able to walk away from some bad situations, and a healthy savings account means that I can. So you might call your savings account Freedom Fund or something like that. Or maybe put a picture of your goals on the savings account header. A lot of banks let you do that now. It's great. The key is that it's identity first and then the behavior follows. And the behavior does follow once you link it to identity and values. Rebels often have really strong values, which is fantastic. And that's why it's key to know why you want to make any particular money changes you're making. You're not going to do it just because. Rebels do better when money feels like a tool for freedom, not a list of obligations. So you can see why so much money advice falls over for them, because these four money personality types, they're so different. And I mentioned it before, but I think it's worth taking some time on this, because a lot of money advice seems to be written for upholders, people who are actually really great at meeting expectations and doing the thing they know they should do. Or some of it, maybe, you know, Dave Ramsey style tactics, is for the obligers, people who respond to being told off and given very strict rules. These things can work if you're wired that way, but if you're not, it's probably going to backfire. And then when you do badly, it feels like the problem is you. But once you understand your money personality, then you can look at the money advice that's around and say, well, now I know how to adapt that to my wiring so that I actually stick with this. Now, how does this play out in relationships? Because you don't need me to tell you that money can be very tricky in relationships. Number one cause of divorce. And it's probably also the number one question in my inbox. People sending me questions saying, how do I make my partner see sense? They're driving me up the wall. And we've all been there, girlfriend. That's also why I really love this framework, because so many money fights aren't actually about the numbers. They're about expectations. And this framework being all about expectations and how we respond to them, well, that just makes it perfect for helping us work through some of these things and getting some tactics to help us better manipulate, work with our partners a little better. Because it's classic, depending on how you get a match up, you know, an upholder often thinks the rebel is irresponsible, while a rebel thinks the upholder is being controlling. An obliger can easily feel unsupported, while a questioner feels rushed. Everyone thinks that they're the one that's being reasonable, but underneath it, we're just motivated differently. And once you understand that, it's also easier to understand how to get back on the same page by talking the other person's language. You look at your underlying motivations and the ways that you respond to money, and you start to design a system that works with that instead of against it, a system that neither of you resents, hopefully, because you understand more about what each of you needs from it. Because especially for us questioners, we can sometimes go away and think we've researched the perfect system and now everyone else just needs to get on board and do it. That's rude. Stop it. There is no universally correct way to handle money. There's just a range of systems, and some will work better for your wiring. Some you will hate and fail almost immediately. And you're not going to get ahead without taking the time to understand your wiring so that you can create those good systems. When money finally feels easier, it's rarely because you've magically become more disciplined. It's actually that you've now found a way to make your goals fit alongside your existing money personality. And now you're not fighting yourself every step of the way. That's it for this episode. If it helped you, first of all, hit subscribe. Secondly, send it to a friend so we can all level up our money together. Until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.